The ninth parak of Shabbos starts out with a set of four Mishnayos that teach us seven different halachas, and most of them don't relate to Shabbos, but the reason that they're categorized together here, specifically here in Masechta Shabbos, is because they relate in a certain way to the last Mishnah of the prior parak, where we saw something interesting, that a pasuk was brought, and it wasn't a conclusive raya, it wasn't a conclusive proof to a halacha that was brought, but it was a somewhat of a support. So we're going to see the same thing here in the next seven halachas and over these four Mishnayos. Psukim will be cited, although they will not be conclusive proofs. So the first Mishnah Aleph goes as follows. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva tells us something when it comes to the halachas of Tuma and Tahara, touching something, not Tumas Maga, when somebody touches something that's very Tame, becomes Tame, but there's another type of Tuma called Tumas Masa, that is a situation that you're not touching the Tame thing, but you're carrying it. For example, somebody is carrying a box, and in the box, there is something that is Tame, so the person carrying it becomes Tame via the item in the box, even though he's not touching it. That is called Tumas Masa, and even if he's carrying a bunch of mattresses, for example, he's carrying a bunch of things, and on the top there's something that is Tame, still it transfers all the way down to him through via Tumas Masa. So here the Mishnah asks as follows, Amar Rabbi Akiva, minayin la'avodah zarah, that if somebody is carrying an item of avodah zarah, but here he's not touching it, he is holding it in a box or something like that, shemetama kemasa Kenida, that it is nonetheless, it's metamei him via the Tumas Masa, like a Nida. In other words, if somebody would be carrying a woman who's a Nida, he would become Tamei even if he's not touching her. For example, he's carrying her on a stretcher or something like that. So the same thing would happen with the Avodah Zarah, even if it's not touching, it's metamei via Tumas Masa. We learn it from a pasuk, Shneemar, he's rem kemodava. This is talking about at the time of Mashiach, it's specifically talking about Avodah Zarah, that you will cast away the Avodah Zarah like a nida that you would cast away. You will say to it, as in the Hemshach Chalutz Pasuk, say tomarlo, say to the Avodah Zarah, go out, go away from me. So the drush is as follows. We see here in the Mishnah that we're talking about Avodah Zarah, and we have a parallel to nida. Ma nida metama b'masa. Just like a nida transfers tuma via tumas masa, even though somebody's not touching it. Avodah Zarah metama b'masa. Same thing applies with Avodah Zarah, even if somebody's not touching it, but we have a situation of masa that he's carrying it, that tuma would be transferred via tumas masa. Mishnah Beis has two different halachas in it, also bringing sources, support from Psukim. The first one deals with the tuma of a boat or a ship. In general, kalim utensils, indeed, when they come in contact with something that is tameh, they do become tameim, but there's a halacha l'moshe misinai that does not apply to a boat, even though all the criteria from tuma may apply. Nonetheless, a boat does not become tameh, and in our Mishnah, which says, minayin l'sfina, where do we learn that a boat is Tahora, even if it comes in contact with something that is Tameh? We now bring a scriptural support, support from a Pasuk, Shene'emar, Derech Aniya Belev Yam. Literally, it means the path of a ship is in throughout the sea. It is literally in the heart of the sea. And we know Derech Aniya. We know that a ship goes into the sea. So what is it coming to teach us? So the drush is as follows. There is a parallel between an Aniya, which is a ship, and the Yam, and the sea. And it's coming to teach us that just like the sea does not become Tame, so too a boat does not become Tame. The next part of the Mishnah talks about Kilayim. Kilayim is prohibited mixtures, that seeds cannot be planted too closely together. That is kilayim, but it will explain a certain way that we can indeed plant five different types of seeds within a garden patch fairly close together without violating the halachas of kilayim. Now, the areas of kilayim in halacha are very complicated. There are isuri d'oraisa, there are isuri d'rabbanan, so we're not going to go into depth about it, but the core concept here is when planting certain seeds, they have to be far enough that they do not appear that they are mingling together. So we don't want the appearance of having planted different types of seeds too closely together. Generally, what that means is that they have to be a certain distance apart, that they do not draw nourishment from the same ground. So that would indeed be the problem. It's called the yinika. They can't be yoneg, draw nourishment from the same ground if they're two different types of seeds. And Chazal told us that on average, the zraim, that the roots of the plants, they will spread out over a 1.5 tefach distance. So because of that, if they'll spread out a 1.5 tefach distance and we're planting two seeds next to each other, each one we need to give a tefach and a half on for one and a tefach and a half on the other. So we have to give a distance of 3 tefachim between two different seeds. So the Mishnah says as follows, Minayin aruga shishisha al shisha tefachim. Where do we know that if we have a garden patch that is 6 tefach by 6 tefach, a tefach is a machlokis what the distance is, but it ranges between 3.2 and 3.8 inches. So we would have, that's each tefach. So where do we know that if we have a garden patch which is 6 tefach by 6 tefach, that we would be permitted shezorin betocha shachamisha zeronim, that we would be permitted to plant within it up to 5 different types of seeds. Arba ruchos aruga, 4 on one each side of the aruga. In other words, if we have a square patch and it's 6 tefach by 6 tefach, so on the far sides of each of them, we can plant one seed. Each side can have one type of seed, so there are 4 sides, one seed on each. So not one seed, but one type of seed on each. So on the 4 sides, we have 4 different types of seeds, and they are on the outside of the 6 tefach of the square. And continuing, ve'echad b'emes, and in the middle, we can put one seed. In other words, that one seed in the middle is going to be 3 tefach from each of the sides around it. So we have a distance of 3 tefach from the 4 different sides. And on the corners, we actually have to leave the corners between all the 4 different sides. We have to leave 1 tefach by 1 tefach empty. And even though that's not going to be 3 tefach away, the core concept is not the 3 tefach, but the core concept is to leave the seeds a distance away so they do not appear to be mixed. So because we have the corners there and we have seeds that are not parallel but perpendicular meeting at the corners, it's clearly evident that they are different types of seeds and they're separate because they are not touching and they are opposite. They're going in opposite directions. So because of that, we can have 4 different types of seeds on the outside of this 6x6 garden and a garden patch, and we have one seed in the middle, which is 3 tefach away from each of the sides, and that's not a problem. So the question that we're dealing with is, where do we have a scriptural support for this, that if you have 4 types of seeds on the 4 different sides and one seed in the middle? So the Mishnah says, Shenemar ki ka'aretz totzit simcha, for like the earth gives forth its plant, ukegana zeruseh tatzmiach. And in other words, like a garden causes its seeds to sprout. That's a continuation of the Mishnah. Now, the drasha goes like this, and then we'll see the rest of the Mishnah, that there are references here to 5 different sproutings. One word is totzi, it comes forth. Number 2 is simcha. Number 3 is zeruseh, is lashon rabim. That is plural tense for sprouting. And tatzmiach also is number 5. So because we have totzi, 1, simcha, 2, zeruseh is plural, so that's another 2, that's another 2. And tatzmiach, we have a total of 5 sproutings. So the Mishnah concludes and says, zara lo nemar. It doesn't say zara, which would mean we can only plant 4 seeds in this patch, which is 6x6. Ela zeruecha, because it's plural, indeed we can get up to 5 different types of seeds planted in this 6 tefach by 6 tefach dark garden patch if we plant it in the way that we mentioned previously. Mishnah Gimel, Minayin, from where do we have a source in a pasuk, lepoleta shichva zera, that a woman who discharges semen the 3rd day after marital relations, bayom ha-shlishi she tameya, that she is tameya. The pasuk says, "Shene'emar heyu nechonim lishloshes yamim." This is a pasuk talking about preparations of Klal Yisrael for Matan Torah, for receiving the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Klal Yisrael, "Separate from your wives for 3 days, because The discharge will cause the woman to be Tameya for that amount of time. There are actually some who are Gores different in this Mishnah, that after 3 days it is Tahor, not Tame. In other words, that you just have to separate for 2 days. On the third day, you become Tahora, even if there is a discharge, because that semen is no longer viable. So that's the question, is it 2 days or 3 days? Continuing, the next halacha brought in our Mishnah deals with halacha of Shabbos. And typically we don't wash our entire bodies on Shabbos. It's actually an issur derabanan to wash one's entire body on Shabbos in warm water. However, obviously for pikuach nefesh that is suspended, the water can even be heated up on Shabbos in issur deraisa. It was believed at the time of Chazal that during a circumcision, a time that a baby is being circumcised, it was dangerous to not wash him both before and after the circumcision. And the Mishnah discusses for how long after the circumcision would they have this requirement to wash the baby, because it was a sakana, danger, if they did not. This is not the halacha nowadays. Nowadays, a newborn baby is not treated any differently from anyone else. And the same requirements, the same Isurim prohibitions apply both to a newborn baby as to everyone else when it comes to washing and heating up water on Shabbos. So at the time of Chazal, Minayin, where do we have a source in a Pasuk? Shemar chitzin es amila, that we wash the area of the mila b'yom hashlishi shechalios b'Shabbos, on the third day after the mila, even if it fell on Shabbos. There are two different views in the Meforshim. Is it that the third day is still dangerous, but the closer to the mila was even more dangerous, or that the third day is the most dangerous? But in any case, the Mishnah brings a pasuk shene emar vayhi b'yom hashlishi b'yosam koavim, and it was on the third day. This is talking about after Anshei Shechem, they had their mila, because Shimon and Levi told them, we'll marry you and you marry with us, after they had absconded with Dina. And Shimon and Levi on the third day after the mila of Anshei Shechem went and attacked and killed the whole village. So we see from there that on the third day it is still a time of sakana. The third and last halacha brought in our Mishnah, minayin shekoshrin lashon shel zehoris berosh sa'ira mishtalech. Where do we know this is talking about part of the avoda and the Yom Kippur? Was that they would have two goats, one that was laHashem and one that was sent out laAzalzel. And the Mishnah is asking, where do we know that seir, that goat that was sent out to Azalzel and thrown over the cliff, that what they would do is they would tie a strip of red wool onto the head of that goat that before it was thrown over the precipice, after it was thrown off of the cliff. So where do we learn that from? Shneamar, the pasuk says, "Im yu chataeichem kashanim kashel agelbin." Literally, it means if your sins will be like scarlet, they will be a very deep red. They will become white as snow. So from here, we have an allusion to the fact that there was a strip of red wool that was tied on, and half of it was tied on to the goat, and half of it was kept up by the person who threw the goat off, and they would be able to see if the tefillahs were accepted if it turned white. Based on this pasuk, this is a remez in this pasuk, if the person who had the other half up on the top of the cliff, if it turned white, they would know that their tefillahs were accepted. Mishnah Dalet continues discussion about a certain Isra on Yom Kippur. As we know, there are Chamisha Inuyim, there are five afflictions that are required on Yom Kippur, including eating, drinking, washing, anointing one's body with oil, wearing shoes, and not engaging in marital relations. So our Mishnah asks as follows, Minayin Lesicha, from where do we know? Where do we have a source in a pasuk to teach us Minayin Lesicha, that anointing with oil for a beneficial purpose, for enjoyment, she kishtia biyom kippurim, that it is like, that is prohibited, like the drinking on Yom Kippur. It's not exactly the same, because drinking, eating and drinking, one would be chayav kares, it's much stricter than, and a sicha, much more stricter punishment, and sicha is not chayav kares. But where do we know that sicha, a source that sicha is also prohibited, just like drinking on Yom Kippur? Afa pishein ra'aya ledavar zecha ledavar. Even though we don't have a proof for it, we have some source in the pasuk, some sort of support for it, based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Shneamar, v'tavo kamayim bikirbo, v'chashemen ba'atzmosav, which means, so it will come like water into his innards. So that's the drinking of water comes inside our bodies, and like oil into his bones, and the oil into his bones, not literally, but is used to apply onto the body, as for a beneficial purpose. So that's the parallel. We see that sicha is kishtia. The poskim ask on this question, how far do we extend this parallel? In other words, they ask specifically the question, you can't eat or drink something that's treif. Would it mean if we're comparing anointing to drinking, you also cannot anoint yourself with something that would be treif, for example, something from a treif animal? And indeed, the psak halacha is that the parallel ends there. We obviously can't eat or drink something that is treif, but when it comes to anointing ourselves, that would not be a problem. In Mishnah Hey, we go back to the discussion of the prior perek, the minimum shear, the minimum amounts that if somebody carries on Shabbos in Rishus HaRabim, he would be chayav for hotza'ah, for carrying. So the Mishnah says as follows, Hamotzi Eitzim, if somebody carries out wood to be used for a fire. Kedei Levasha Beitza Kala, it would have to be the minimum amount that could be used to cook an egg. We're talking about an easily cooked egg. That would be a chicken egg. And again, we've seen this concept in the past that it had been mixed with oil and the fire pan was heated. So that's the concept here, to quickly cook an egg. Some of the poskim say that it doesn't even have to cook the full egg, just a grogeres, a dried fig's worth of the egg, and that would be sufficient. So any wood necessary to complete the bishul, the cooking of that amount of an egg, that would be chayav an hotzah. Continuing, tevalin are spices, kedei litabel beitza kala, in order to spice up that egg that we just mentioned before. And if you carry out different types of spices, umitztarfin ze im ze, they would all add up together to combine to the minimum shear, because you may want to combine different spices, as long as they could spice up that egg, that would be chayav an hotzah. Next discussion, we have a number of items that are grouped together that would be used for a dye, D-Y-E, for coloring. Some of them would color green or blue. Klipe agozim, these are the husks of a nut. Klipe rimonim, peels from the pomegranate, that was obviously used for red. Itasis upua, also those items would be used to color things. Kedelitzboa, enough of those to dye, bahen beged katan bisvacha, literally a small beged, a small piece of cloth that would be used on a woman's headdress. We're talking now of about a small piece of cloth. It was like a net-like cloth that would use at the top of a covering for a woman's head. That would be the minimum amount. If the dye was not sufficient to color that amount of clothing, cloth, then the person would not be chayav. Continuing, now we're going to talk about somebody who carries out detergent. Mei raglayim, various items for detergent. Mei raglayim, which is urine, and various other things. Neser, boris, kemunya, ashlag, these are all different types of items, that be the substances that would be used for detergent. It would have to be a minimum amount. Kedei lekabes bahen beged katan bisvacha, it would have to be a minimum amount that it could launder that small net-like cloth that would be on top of the woman's head covering. It would, if it's less than that, it was not considered something that is significant, and there would be no chiyuv on hotzah. We have a dissenting opinion from Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to this last group of detergent items. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kedei lahavir al hakesem, in order, the minimum amount would be the amount to remove a stain. So that would be the required amount, which is a lesser amount than that of the Tanakama. Mishnah Vav, pilpeles kolshu, somebody who carries out into a Rishus HaRabim pilpeles, which is a type of pepper that was used to prevent or treat bad breath. It would be even in a small amount. We can imagine it must have been very harif, very strong tasting. If we think about Listerine, very strong, you don't need too much of that. So kolshu, even a minor amount, tiny amount, that would be chayev on hotzah, carrying on Shabbos. V'itran, Itron, we've seen at the beginning, towards the beginning of Bamem Adlikin, it's a certain substance that was from the residue of pitch. It was like an oily substance. And also Vitron Kolshu, even in a small amount, because it could be used not only to light a flame, but also to treat headaches. Continuing, Mine Besamim, different types of spices, Umine Matachot, and all different types of metals, kol shen, also in a small amount. Misamim, a small, good smell can have an impact, and also a small amount of metal can also have a functional use. For example, to use it as a pinpoint, that would also be something that could be used. So you don't need very much of it, so that's why it is kol shen, even a minor, tiny amount. Me'avne ha-mizbeach, if one would take out chips of stone that broke off of the mizbeach, the altar in the base of Mikdash, u'me'afar ha-mizbeach, or from the dust of the earth that was underneath the mizbeach, inside the mizbeach, mekek svarim, this is the decay, the remains that fell off of Svarim. Svarim is not our type of Svarim that had been printed at the time of Chazal. It was all written by hand, so it was like a Sefer Torah or Megillas, scrolls of the Tanakh or whatever other Sefer Kodesh it was, Mekek Svarim, Umekek Mitbechoseim, and also the covers that were used to cover the Svarim also had a certain level of Kedusha, Kolshu, even a minor amount of that decayed amount, that had to be Shematznin Osan Gonzan. People would actually store those even small quantities away in order to put it into the Geniza, Geniza meaning a safe place, to treat it properly with Kedusha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on one point, he says, or he adds on a point, but the Tanakhama would not agree with this. Af hamosi motzi mimishamshe avodas kochavim kolshen, anyone who takes out something that was used in the worship of Avodah Zorah, candles will lit for an Avodah Zorah, the knife that was used to strach the korban to an Avodah Zorah, the mishamshe Avodah Zorah, if it was used in the worship of an Avodah Zorah, we have an obligation to get rid of it, to destroy it, even the most small amount. So that's why he says even a kolshu of this mishamis of an Avodah Zorah, and the Mishnah brings a pasuk to back that up, Shenemar, in talking about the Iran Idachas, the majority of the city worshipped Avodah Zorah, that the city and its property, the assets, are destroyed, v'lo yidbak, biyatcha mi'uma min hacherim, literally, and there shall not cling to your hand anything of that that was banned in the city. Everything must be destroyed. So to hear, if somebody carries out something that was used in the worship of Avodah Zorah, also in the smallest amount, it has to be destroyed. So to hear carrying on Shabbos, even if it's a tiny amount, it would be a chiyuv of hotza on Shabbos. However, the Tanakhama would disagree with that because this is carrying something out to be destroyed, not something that you're treating respectfully and want to keep, something that you want to get rid of. We have a couple of interesting points, halacha lemaisa, that fall out of this Mishnah. The Chashukei Chemed was asked as follows, a gabai of a shul, he wanted to make a zecher le korban in the shul itself, as people commonly do in their homes. They leave an amma by an amma in unpainted areas, so he wanted to do it in the shul. And his concept was that he knew that the Arabs had been digging out of the Harabais and simply throwing out the stones and the dirt from Harabais, which has a special kedusha, and he wanted to get a stone that he would be able to put on top of the Aron HaKodesh. And in fact, he did it. He found the proper stone that had been on the Har HaBayis. It was part of the Har HaBayis and had been excavated. And the Chashukei Chemed was asked, what should he do? Actually, he quotes from the Beis Yitzchak that says that min haroi, what should be done, as we've seen in our Mishnah, is if you have dirt from the Mizbeach, or if you have Avanim, stones from the Mizbeach, they should be gonzan, they have to be buried, they have to put away in a very respectable way, so to be hanging it on top of the iron apparently is a problem. However, bidyevet, after the fact, if it's already been set up on top of the Aron Kodesh, it's done already, they would not have to remove it. Why? The theory here is that is its place of Geniza. Geniza, I guess in this case, doesn't necessarily have to be designated in the ground and be put away where we know it's going to be respected, but this is a sign of respect also to the stone. It is acting as a zecher l'churban, and also people will be davening when they see the stone. It will inspire them to daven for the Beis HaMikdash to Shibane Dimei Rabbi Amenu. So that's question number one. Another interesting question, somebody wanted to send a non-Jewish friend of his who was from the Hasidei Umas Olam. He was a very pious non-Jew. He wanted to send, he had actually saved many Jews from death. It doesn't say when, but it could have been during the Holocaust. And he wanted to send him a flask of dirt that was taken from the Har HaBayis also when it was being excommunicated. And the Chashukei Chemed says that this is indeed problematic for two reasons. Number one, it has to be put into Geniza. It has to be put away in a place that is going to be treated respectfully. Also, the dirt from the Har HaBayis, it has special kedusha, so it shouldn't be floating around being sent to people. That is inappropriate, there's a requirement that it be treated respectfully and buried. That's problem number one. Problem number two also is that to send it to somebody private is very different from putting it up in a shul. That would be a problem of gezel, stealing. So he doesn't really focus on the fact that it's being sent to a non-Jew. These two rationales would apply whether it's being sent to a non-Jew or a Jew. We have two problems. Number one is that it has to be put in geniza, buried, or put in a respectable way on the side. And number two, because it is stealing a public asset of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishnah Zayin, the final Mishnah in our Perek, says as follows, Hamotzi kupas harochlin, somebody who carries out into a Rishus HaRabim, a box of a peddler. The peddlers used to go around and sell perfumes out of a box, and it was one box, but many perfumes inside of it. We think of a contemporary parallel, those fancy boxes that we may take out for dessert that have a lot of types of teas in it, divided up. So the Mishnah says, af al pi sheyesh ba minim harbe, even though it has many types of perfume, or we'd say teas inside of it, eino chayv el achatas echas, the person who's carrying it into Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos is only going to be chayv one korban chatas, one iser of carrying, one to require the bringing of a korban chatas, because the entire box is considered one item that's being carried, even though there are individual items inside of it. Continuing, we're now going to talk about more minimum measures for the Isra of Hotza'a. What happens if somebody carries out seeds to plant in a garden? So, zeir one gina, garden seeds, pachot mikrogeres, slightly less than the size of a grogeres. We've seen that shear before. That's the amount to carry generally a food into Rishus HaRabim, a dried fig. So the same amount applies here to the garden seeds, because people are not going to plant less than that measure. It won't be worth their while. So that's the minimum amount. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra disagrees. Omar Chamisha, people would even plant five seeds. So if somebody who carries out five seeds would be chayav hotza'ah. Now we're going to talk about certain types of seeds that were more valuable. So zera kishuyin shnayim. If you have seeds to plant cucumbers, they would be two seeds. This is the minimum shear. Zera deluyim shnayim. The seeds to plant gourds would be two seeds. And also another two seeds of zera pol hamitri shnayim. That's a bean-like plant. So a minimum of two seeds to be over the iser of hotza'ah. Now, to finish up the Mishnah, we're going to talk about carrying of locusts on Shabbos out in the Rishus HaRabim. Chagav chai, tahor, we're talking about now a locust that is chai, is alive, and it is tahor, it's a kosher. Somebody has the Mesorah, some of certain types of species of locusts are actually kosher. We don't really know the Mesorah nowadays, at least Ashkenazim. There may be certain other Jewish minhagim, like Sfaradim or Temanim, certain areas that they may have a Mesorah that certain species are kosher. So here we're talking about when they did have the Mesorah at the time of Chazal, Chagav Chai Tahor. So we're talking about a live locust that is kosher. Kosher would be permitted to carry it out. I'm sorry, it would be a usher to carry it out in any amount, any size. Why? Because that is a significant thing. Why? Because it can be given to a child to play with. That would be a toy. Even a tiny little locust that was kosher, a child would play with it. So much for Playmobil and Lego. You can play with your free locust, even a tiny one. But that, somebody who carries it on a Shabbos, because it has a function to be played with a child, would be chayav on hotza'ah. But however, if it's a dead one, mace, the shear now is krogeris. That's like any other edible food. This is talking about when the locust could be eaten. They had the Mesorah. So it'd be just like any other food. The shear is a krogeris, a dried fig, the measure of a dried fig. Continuing, a specific species of locust that would be used for medicinal purposes, for healing, tzipores kramim, that's the type of species, ben chaya ben mesa, whether it's alive or dead, kolshi, in any minimum amount, that could be used, shematznin osa l'refua, because people would indeed hold on to that, put it away for when they needed it for the purpose of medicine, for healing. Now, Rabbi Yehuda has a different take. The Tanakhama says you can only there's significance to only kosher animals, a locust, and even a tiny one, because a child would play for it. How about one that's not kosher? A child could play with it. Also, the concern of the Tanakhama then is that the child may come to eat it if it dies. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af hamotzi chagav chai tameh, even somebody who carries out a chagav, a locust that is chai, that is alive, but it's tameh, it's not kosher, there is still significance to that kolshu. Even if it's tiny, it is still possible a child would play with it. Shematznin oso lekatan asachekbo, indeed they would give it to children to play with them. Rabbi Yehuda is of the view that he's not concerned that the child will come to eat the locust if it dies, because he's going to be grieving over the loss of his locust and he will not come to eat it, as opposed to the Tanakhama, who had the concern that he may come to eat it. Just an interesting question. We've been talking about locusts in a Mesorah. Ashkenazim don't have a Mesorah as to which locusts are kosher. So the question was posed to the Mishnah Halachas. If we have an Ashkenazi who doesn't have a Mesorah as to what's kosher and what's not kosher locusts, so the minhag of Ashkenaz is to not eat any locusts. And you have, he has a friend, for example, who's a Sfaradi or a Temani, who does have a Mesorah as to what's kosher and does eat locusts, and the Ashkenazi wants to partake, would it be permitted? So the Mishnah Halachas, Rav Menashe Klein, quotes a Rosh and a Tshuva that was asked a quite similar question when it came to a certain type of bird. And certain people had the Mesorah that it was kosher, but Ashkenazim did not have that Mesorah that it was kosher. So the Rosh said as follows, She'ochlin oto b'ksas mekomos, it was eaten in certain places, a few places, not many places. So first, the Rosh says, you need to really look into their Kabbalah. Do they really have a Mesorah? Did somebody just make it up that it's kosher? So that's the first thing that you have to validate. Is there a real Mesorah that it's kosher? That's not the case of we know certain cases of locusts are kosher. So the question is it a good Mesorah or not? But assuming it is a good Mesorah, nonetheless, the Rosh says, V'daki ani lo hayisi ochel al pi Mesorah shalem. I would not eat based on their Mesorah, because my Mesorah is a Kabbalah from my Rabbanim and our ancestors, the Chachmei Ashkenaz. And indeed, if we don't have a Kabbalah in our Mesorah that something is kosher, it should not be eaten because somebody else has a Mesorah that thing, that item can be eaten.